Blog Talk Radio.
Anxiety sets in, I'm starting to pace. My nerves unsettle, sweat drips my face. Hands take, can't escape this decision I make. Heart racing, my faith says this is my fate. I just brace and I take in the face of adversity. Tasting this certainty, the brakes ain't hurting me. Gain on, a bomb, my pain stronger. Fame smarter, street smarter, train harder. Can't stop me, drop me, I'm not losing. I'm too fast, lightning even when I'm not moving. All heart, leave these cowards on cold. I'm hot, not to mention all the power I hold. Keep moving, keep training, headstrong. Be patient, meet them head to head. I don't care if it's the least safest. Not stopping, have a promise to prove. I'm a fighter, it's not an option to lose.
Good evening. How are you? How's everybody doing? Thank you for joining me. This is Charlie Alejandro, and welcome to the Diamond in the Rough Ordinary Woman Talk Show. I'm hoping everybody had a great weekend. Luckily, here in the New England region, we actually had a really great weekend. Real quick in the chat room, welcome guest 3766. Nice of you to join us. Nice of you to be here for the show. Today's guest, it's going to be Natalie Geraldo Martinez. She's going to be with us in a few minutes, and she's an amazing, amazing lady. Mountain Man, welcome to the chat room. How are you, my co-host? Yay! Thank you for coming. I'm so glad you made it. We're actually going to have an amazing guest. Oh, also guest 3794. Thank you for stopping by in the chat room. Nice of you to join us. So, yeah, Natalie's going to be with us in a few minutes, and we're going to have her. She's an amazing woman. She's married. She's a wife. She's got three children. And on top of that, she has been diagnosed with the disease lupus. She's had it for a few years. And she has refused to let that dictate to her quality of life. So she's going to be with us a little later. Real quick, I have decided that Monday needs to have a name. You know, we have Wishful Wednesday, and we have... I forgot what name did we give. I'm going to have to ask Mountain Man. Hey, do you remember what name we gave to Friday? You're supposed to be, like, you know, being my co-host here helping me out. I can't remember. We're going to have to listen to Friday's show and decide what we actually decided to name the show. But what we want to do is use Motivational Monday. There we go, Mountain Man. Sounds good to me. Motivational Monday. I really want to motivate everybody to stop looking at Monday as this horrendous day. Hey, welcome, guest 3832. I want to motivate everybody to look at Monday as not something to be dreaded or something to be feared because we have to go back to work or because we have to deal with so many issues that we're not too happy with, but as a day to use to say, okay, what am I going to do this week? What am I going to accomplish? What are some of my goals? What are some of the things that I want to get out of life? And I really want people to start thinking about things they can do to improve their quality of life. And that quality of life doesn't necessarily mean that you have to go out and reinvent yourself or that you have to quit your job and go run away to the circus, although that might be what will excite you. But it can be just the way you look at life. It could be that when you wake up on Monday morning, instead of saying, oh, my God, I can't believe it's Monday and I have to go back to work, you might decide to say, yes, it's Monday, I have a fresh new start to the week, I can think of ways that I can maybe be friendlier to people, maybe my attitude will be different, and instead of wishing my minutes away till the end of Monday is over and I can go home again and do whatever, I'm going to make the most of every minute that I have in that day to improve not only myself, but the people around me. So Motivational Monday, one of the things that I will be looking for is for our listeners to email me, share ideas with me about ways that they can encourage others to be motivated on Monday. That might be sharing your favorite sayings, short stories, maybe things that have happened to you. If you want to share that with us, you can email me at ordinarywoman13@yahoo.com, and I will actually put that website, that email up in the chat room in a few minutes. Also, if you want to call in to talk to our guest, Natalie, she'll be on in a minute. I have her waiting to tap her in. The number is 347-989-1473. Again, that number is 347-989-1473. Or you can go to the website, www.blogtalkradio.com/ordinary woman, spelling W-M-N, and you can go right in there. Once you reach my page, you can log on to the show, and you can actually call in to the show directly through the internet if you have headsets. So that's another way you can do it. Or you can post your question in our chat room, and Mountain Man will be more than glad to moderate the question and make sure it gets answered. So with that said, I'm going to check and see if Natalie, there she is. So hold on a second. Natalie, is that you?
Yes, it is. Hi.
Hi, how are you, honey? Thank you so much for being on our show today.
Thank you. No problem. I'm glad to be here.
I know that for me, I've known you for a few years, and then you actually moved from this region down to Florida. And I really would like to start out with you sharing a little bit of just your life in general up to the point where you got diagnosed with your disease and what impact that had on you.
I'm sorry, what did you say again?
I wanted to share with the listeners what was your life like before you got diagnosed with lupus, and what effect did that have on you once you did get diagnosed?
Okay, well, basically, I got diagnosed about a year and a half after I arrived in Florida. I worked weddings, I did weddings, and I was really involved just with my job, and I had two kids at the time, and I was always on the go and really busy and kept active. And then I came here. I had met somebody who was in the military, and we were getting married, and everything seemed really good. Finally, it seemed like everything was coming together in my life, and I thought, you know, for all that I'd been through in my life, I really thought, well, you know, it's finally coming together. Everything is going to be great. And I was happy, and I loved my new environment. And I had a baby with him. And shortly after I had the baby, I wasn't feeling too good, but I thought baby blues or feeling tired or just it happens. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, an everyday thing that can happen when you're a new mom. My husband, when my baby was 8 months old, had to leave. He had to go on a mission for 8 months, almost. Mm-hmm. It was 7 months, I'm sorry. And I stayed alone here, and I think just the stress of him leaving brought on my first flare. I had no family here. I just had the kids. It was just the kids and me. And I started getting really sick, and I started seeing the doctor really often. And at the beginning, they even thought, well, you know, you're just stressed, you're tired, mm-hmm. even to the point that some doctors said, maybe you need some antidepressants. And I said, no, I really know something's wrong with me. And, yeah.
Okay, Natalie, stop there real quick. I really want to emphasize this point to our listeners. This is very common for women when they go see their physicians for the first time, when they have an illness that, quote, unquote, doesn't fall within the normal spectrum of what illnesses are like. And it's usually either you're ignored or you're basically told, it's probably in your head, let's deal with it with antidepressants and that kind of thing. So that's basically what you were faced with as well.
Oh, yes, definitely. I mean, I started thinking that I was crazy. I had lost about 15 pounds, and they were telling me, well, your baby weight is coming off, and I was getting fevers, and they were telling me, you know, well, it's a low-grade fever, no big deal. I was getting rashes. They told me it was my nerves. Because my husband was gone, they thought I had problems coping, and I knew that, yes, I was stressed, I was exhausted, but I also knew that I didn't feel right.
Mm-hmm.
So they finally put me with a doctor who said to me that he was soon to leave that hospital, but that before he left, he was supposed to be stationed elsewhere. He told me he would go ahead and that he was going to make sure he found out what was wrong with me because he thought something was wrong with me. And
you were fortunate enough to actually get a physician that was willing to listen to you and realize that even though he couldn't figure out quite right away what was wrong. He knew that something was definitely wrong.
Yes, and he said, he said, even if it takes as long as, you know, the time that I have set here. And ironically, he ran all the last tests. He said to me, about a week before I was diagnosed, he said, I think I know what you have. Let me run blood work one more time. And I thought, you know, if there's any blood left kind of deal, because I had been through all kinds of scans and all kinds of different things. And finally, we went ahead and did the last of the blood work, and my husband was set to come back home that Monday. So it did take the full 7 months to get diagnosed. I had a phone call come in on a Sunday. Usually on Sundays, you know, if a doctor's calling you, it's not good news. And I was making it was my husband's birthday at the same time, the day that he was arriving. He had had his birthday the day before, and we were going to celebrate his birthday, and I'm baking, and it's late at night, and the phone rings around 9:30, and it's a doctor. Mm-hmm. It's a new doctor telling me that she was calling. She was my new doctor, and that the old doctor had just left to be stationed in Puerto Rico, and she said to me, but I have results for you. We know what you have. You need to come in immediately tomorrow. And I basically told her, you know, unless I'm dying, I'm not coming in tomorrow because I've got my husband to pick up. We'll deal with this the next day. Mm-hmm. So from then on, I picked up my husband, and I don't want to say that I lied, but I didn't want to worry him, so I didn't give him the extent of what I was going through till he actually arrived here in the States.
Right.
And then we went in.
Natalie, let me stop you there, right there, because I just want our listeners to understand the magnitude of your personality. And I know you personally, so this, while I admire you, it's so much part of your makeup and what you've been taught from your family that, to me, that's who you are. But the average listener has to understand that you have three children, one of which is a small child, a small baby.
No, he's seven now. Yes.
He's seven now, but at that time when you were going through this. Yes,
eight
months old. Your husband, now you're in a new area, and your husband has been sent off on a military mission. You're doing this by yourself. And then on top of that, you're having symptoms of an underlying illness that has not been diagnosed. And the forethought on your mind was to not upset your husband until he had a chance to come home and that you were able to deal. That just is amazing to me, Natalie, of the integrity and of your character, where a lesser woman would have been like on the phone going, I don't care what you're doing, where you are, go talk to your superiors and you need to come home because I'm not dealing with this by myself.
No, I couldn't.
Right. And I just want our listeners to understand the type of woman you are, because it's such an amazing thing for you to do that even though you were dealing with all of this, your main priority was for your husband to have a clear mind and to be able to focus on what he was dealing with at that time.
Oh, definitely. I mean, if he was focusing on home, there could be an accident. And, you know, it might not mean just his life. It could mean somebody else's life because he's not paying attention. And so I did tell him that I wasn't feeling well. I did tell him that I was having some down days, but I didn't tell him the extent of it.
Right. So now your husband's coming home. You've gotten this call from the doctor. So what happened from there?
I pick him up that day, everything's great, wonderful, and I then lay it on him in the car. I tell him what's going on, we sit at IHOP and we talk about it some more, and then the next day I have to go to the appointment. I guess because I'd been alone for so long, as in he had been gone for so many months, that I thought I had to go into that room and hear my diagnosis on my own. I left him with the three kids in the waiting room, and I went in with the doctor by myself. And
oh my goodness.
I don't know why I did that. I can't explain it. I didn't want to break down in front of him, and I didn't know how I was going to react. And she went ahead and told me that I had lupus, and I had heard what lupus was before. It was one of the things I had looked into because of my symptoms. And I basically said to her, well, you know, give me medicine, fix it, make it better. What can we do? And she said, you don't understand. You're never going to be the same person you were, no matter what you do. The type of lupus you have, the type of lupus I have, to get into it a little, it affects my organs. And it also overlaps with other diseases. So since then, I've been diagnosed with other diseases. So at the beginning, I was just, my temperament was, this isn't going to bring me down. I'm going to be strong-willed, and I'm going to keep going. And I was nursing the baby at the time, and I thought, I'm not going to stop nursing over these medicines. And so I got...
Okay, again, I have to stop you right here, Natalie, because it's like you just blow my mind. On top of everything else, once again, and I know you, you're not a martyr by any means of the imagination. You're
no.
a very independent woman. You do things for you, and you have no shame in saying to your family, that's all well and good, but it's mommy time, Natalie time, I'm doing this. Yet still, your priority was to continue to breastfeed your child because you knew that was what was best for the child.
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
And I did. I got a lot of fight, especially, of course, from mom, I'm sure you know.
Yep.
And yep. I was adamant about it, and I didn't. I stopped nursing finally. It kind of came to an abrupt end when I was taken into the hospital, and I had inflammation around the sac of my heart. I had they had to give me radiation that night to shrink it, and they told me that I couldn't lay near the baby or get near the baby for at least 24 hours. And at that point, I thought he was old enough that, you know, why start again if I stopped for 24 hours? I might as well keep on with it. And not only that, but the person who came into the room, who was a nurse, said to me, I'm a mother too, but you can't be a mother if you don't take care of yourself first. And she said, you will die if you don't take care of yourself. And so that night I left with the prescriptions for the first time and started taking the medication for the lupus and for the inflammation. And then since then it's built up and I've took lots of meds and gone down a little. And it just depends. I've had a lot of different things go on. I've had inflammation in, how I said, around the lining of my heart. I've had several times inflammation around the lining of my lungs. I've had problems with my kidneys. I've had what they're not sure is a seizure or some kind of convulsion in several occasions. And then I suffer a lot from my joints, a lot from my joints.
Now, just to let our listeners know, lupus is one of the diseases, well, there's several, but one of the diseases that is most seriously misdiagnosed and that is most commonly missed. Because and this term just really... me because they say, well, it's not a quote-unquote real disease. And the reason some people have that misconception is because they view it that it's not up there with cancer or diabetes or all this stuff. But the reality is that that fact in itself is what makes lupus such a hard illness to live with because there is no cure. It's not like, you know, some forms of cancer that can be cured and go into you know, you can get rid of them. Lupus is there for the rest of your life once you're diagnosed. And a lot of women have actually lived with it for 5 or 10 years before they're even diagnosed with it. So all that residual damage that has been done from it not being diagnosed has to be dealt with as well.
Well, that's what they believe happened to me. They believe that I had it since I was 15. I had been mysteriously ill at 15 years old and hospitalized for a whole week. And I got better on my own, was sent home, and that was the end of it.
Right. And the other thing, too, that people don't understand about lupus, it's I call it the friendly disease because it's weird to put it that way, but it just loves to come along with company, which means most women or most people that are diagnosed with lupus always wind up also being diagnosed with other ailments, other illnesses that, again, aggravate each other. It's like a never-ending cycle. I mean, people with lupus commonly will have irritable bowel syndrome. They'll have pernicious anemia. They'll have all these other ailments that, again, because people aren't as familiar with them, they don't view it as, quote-unquote, a real illness. But it's a vicious cycle because once one illness flares up, it creates the other one, and that's where that cycle starts.
Yes.
So now, Natalie, once that started and you went through all of this, what was the key point for you to continue with your attitude of this is not going to get the best of me? I am going to beat this and I'm going to actually be an example to other people dealing with this.
Well, I have to say I have my good days and my bad days. And when I start off with a bad day, I vent and I say what I have say or to the first person that calls me or during the day, and then I go on with it. I just have to go with the flow. I can't let it take, you know, a toll on me. I have three kids at home. I have to keep busy. I have a husband, and they're all really caring and loving, and they're all very supportive and helpful, and that helps keep me going too, that I have them. But I can't let it get the best of me, because I want to see the day my children graduate from high school, mm-hmm. and the day they get married and have their own kids, and I have to do it. I have to do it one way or another. Some days I feel like I'm not going to make it through. Some days mm-hmm. it feels like it's too much to deal with. But, you know, then I remember, or then I have a better day, and I look at that day like, well, you know, it was just a bad day. There's nothing I can do. I'm going to have good days and bad days, and I just, this is the way my life is. I have to deal with it.
So, Natalie, I have a question. On top of your family, what other support systems are available to you to help you through those days where you're like, you know what, I'm really tired. I don't want to deal with this anymore. What are some of the support systems that are available that you can reach out to help you get over those days?
Well, I'll tell you, I have a very best friend that hears my mouth every morning. Oh, she's a love, and she has her own issues, and I don't want to call them issues, but she has a lot of her own going on. But
right.
She's always there in the morning to pick up the phone while I'm walking the kids, after I've walked the kids to school, or after, you know, I'm sitting down and I'm alone at home again, and I vent with her every day, and she's godsend. She's definitely godsend. You know, my sister as well is really good. My parents mm-hmm. are really good, and I keep really busy. I work a lot volunteer hours with the school that my smallest child goes to, and the teachers have gotten to know me for who I am and know that they can always count on me regardless of anything, and they're really, I can always count on them too, if that makes sense. So
right.
I have them, but I also have people who think that I'm a hypochondriac or that I'm crazy, that I can't look this good, and I'm not talking about, oh, how attractive. I'm talking about I look like a regular person, you know, like you. If I walked down the street, they wouldn't be able to tell the difference unless they'd ask.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up, because that was another point that I wanted to bring, which, again, goes to that misconception that, well, it's not a real disease. It's that type of illness where you're not going to see the loss of hair, or you're not going to see the extreme weight loss, or you're not going to see the marks, or the, you know, all these other things. And you're right. It's amazing to me that a lot of people, on top of the fact that they're dealing with this illness even before it's diagnosed, they have to deal with basically educating people around them to let them know that this is a very real disease, and just because you can't see it outwardly, there's a lot of stuff going internally that is creating all of this. And
yes.
Do you find that that's one of the most frustrating things for you, to be able to get people to understand that, no, I'm not a hypochondriac, no, it's not in my head, but that this is a real disease?
Oh, absolutely. It is the most upsetting. I've worked with my son's in the Boy Scouts, and a friend, a nice person that's in the group, I mentioned to him that I had lupus just a week ago. And I've known this person for over a year and a half now, and he said, lupus, what's that, first of all? So
mm-hmm.
I had to go into teaching mode for a few minutes, and then he said,
right.
I need to apologize to you. And I said, for what? And he said, I thought you were a hypochondriac. And I
mm-hmm.
said, why would you think that? And he said, because every time you're going to get up, you ooh or ow or complain. And I said, that's because I suffer from a lot of joint pain, and I might not notice I do that. I guess I didn't notice that I did that, but I guess apparently I do. And he goes, and a lot of times before, you know, when we're at, I ask you how you're doing, you'll say, well, I have a really bad headache, but I'm doing fine, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I guess that's just me. I tell you what I feel or how I feel, and then I go on, but everything's fine. So it was really surprising to me to hear, hey, you know, I thought, and actually he told me other people in the group thought that this was my issue too.
You know, and it's sad, because I know one of the other things that comes up a lot when before you're diagnosed or even as part of lupus is the fatigue. Where you are tired. I mean, you are physically exhausted to the point that you need to lay down. And again, people are looking at you like, oh, you're just lazy. You don't.
Mm-hmm.
And then the headaches, the pain in the joints. And I can totally relate to you. When there are times that when you're sitting down and you do go to get up, you can't help it. That hour, it comes out because that's how severe the pain is. And the reality is, if people could understand how severe that pain was, that little ooh or ow is nothing compared to that. And again, that's got to be something that's very difficult for you to, for people to understand in general, and for you to deal with having this illness.
Absolutely, absolutely. It is. It's very difficult, and it's a daily, the fatigue is a daily thing. I have fibromyalgia with the lupus, and every day I wake up tired.
Yeah, and that's another illness that has the tendency to want to that goes in there because of the residual from all the stuff that's going on with the lupus. That's another one, that one of the other diseases that I call the friends. They kind of bring them all together. It's very common for a person diagnosed with lupus to have at least two or three other diseases along with it as a result of the lupus. And now you're dealing with three or four illnesses that can pop up at any other time. And on top of that, Natalie, you're dealing with people thinking that you're just making this up. You're just a hypochondriac and you just want to get attention because they don't understand. Now, what do you think are some of the things that our listeners can do or we can do to get people more educated to understand this a little bit more?
I mean, definitely look into the website for the Lupus Foundation. There's a lot more people than you think out there that have lupus. In fact, there's more people with lupus than there is with, I believe, breast cancer, leukemia, and AIDS all together.
Right.
So it's a large amount of people. And just get educated. And when you meet somebody who has it, it's being a support system. It takes more than one person, definitely, just to help. We do it on our own, to be honest with you. We do it just pretty much when it comes to my family, it's just us. It's what my husband does for me. It's what my children do for me. And it's just us. That's all I have here. So it's hard. So I advise people that if you do know somebody to reach out and help and do what you can. You know, that person needs help almost every day, especially
right.
when the disease is so, pronounced as it is with me. But the foundation is the best place to look up stuff, really. And there's so many things. I mean, to raise money for them, they're so just they're not looked at. So many other things are paid attention to and given so much money on a yearly basis, and the Lupus Foundation doesn't get much at all. I mean, there needs to be more done. There definitely needs to be more done. I don't know if you're aware, but medication for lupus is Plaquenil. The medication you generally are given is Plaquenil to help protect your organs. And Plaquenil was given to people with lupus 40 years ago. There has never been a different medication. This is it. Plaquenil also treats malaria. That's how they came up with this. So, in other words, we're being treated like we were 40 years ago. There is nothing new. There's some upcoming stuff, but it's overseas, and God only knows how long it's going to take to get here. You know, how many of us will survive through this or not before there's actual, new medicine out there.
Right. And the thing that I want our listeners to know, coupling onto what Natalie just referred to a little bit earlier, is that the majority of sufferers of lupus are women. And usually, and it's funny because they say, well, lupus doesn't show up till women are in their 30s. That's not the case. The case is it's not diagnosed till women are in their 30s. Sufferers of lupus, like in your case, when you said you got mysteriously ill at 15, the illness has been there, it just has not been diagnosed. The other thing I want our listeners to know is the fact that the majority of women wind up actually having to diagnose themselves because they're, like in your case, Natalie, when you said you had already looked into it and that was one of the things that popped up, that's the most common way of patients, sufferers of lupus, of getting diagnosed, where they go to the doctor and say, you need to test me for lupus. And unfortunately, the hardest thing, and this is very common, especially among women, for some reason, doctors love to dismiss what women are saying. I mean, it's already been proven that the doctors basically dismiss women a minute into whatever they're saying. So So women have to be assertive in saying, I want to be tested. This is my right. And if your doctor is not doing that for you, you need to go and get another doctor, and don't take no for an answer. You have a right to find out what is going on, and you also have a right to decide what course of treatment you're going to receive. Real quick, Natalie, the website, www.lupus.org, for that information. Also, listeners, if you want to call in, if you have any questions for Natalie, the number is 347-989-1473, or you can go to our website, www.blogtalkradio.com/ordinarywoman, the spelling is W-M-N, and you can go right to the website there, and you can go into our chat room, or you can click directly if you have any questions for Natalie. Now, Natalie, going back to that, it has to boggle people's minds that people with lupus are being treated with knowledge, research that is 40 years old. And with all the advances that have occurred in medicine in the last 40 years, you cannot tell me that there is not a better way to treat lupus. But like you said, the information isn't out there. The money isn't going into research. So what are some ways do you think that we can get more exposure out there and get people to get really behind this cause to try to get more research on this?
You know, I've tried. I contacted the Lupus Foundation and said that I wanted to do a fundraiser. They told me that they couldn't leave me or my husband in charge of a fundraiser because he's my main caregiver if I got sick, and because I'm too sick to deal with the just, you know, the back and forthing of trying to get it together.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not allowed, basically, to do this. They don't recommend it. In other words,
right.
They don't recommend it because they think it'd be too much stress on me. So, you know, if you're interested in doing something that's, you know, helpful for people who really need it, I just encourage people to try to get a fundraiser together, whether it's, you know, golfing or a dance or, you know, a walk or a run. I mean, most definitely, those things would definitely help raise money.
Okay.
Those are the things that are needed now, you know, that there's people that volunteer their time and get a group together of people that want to help in that manner.
Right. Now, the other thing with the disease of lupus, because we also talked about the fact that it always has other disease coming with it and you dealing with the misconceptions and stuff, what do you think that we as women, not just necessarily on the fundraising part and stuff, but what do you think we as women could do in other areas to make sure that our voice is heard when it comes to our medical needs?
Well, I guess from my personal experience, and you just talked about it a little bit, about, you know, if you don't like what your doctor has to say, you always have a right for a second opinion. Originally, when I got sick, I got so tired of the doctors because I thought there came a point that I became so ill I thought I'd die. I was put on substance medication for 18 months, and I just got so ill because there was no other way to control this disease. And finally, I called my insurance carrier, and I said, these doctors are going to kill me. I need to see somebody else. You need
right.
to okay that I go somewhere else. And I happened to get somebody understanding on the phone, and they told me to go for it and gave me different names, and I researched, and I went to two other rheumatologists, that's the main doctor that sees you for the lupus, and one of them thought I was crazy. He wanted to test me all over again, of course, to get money from the insurance,
right.
even though I clearly had all the stuff showing that I had it already.
Right.
In the meantime, he wanted to take all my medicines away, and he wanted to go ahead and put me on antidepressants once again. And then the other doctor just kind of was very laid back and didn't care. I mean, if I whatever I would have asked him for medication, he would have gave me, and I thought, I don't want this. And finally, I came across the right doctor, and I think that's what it took. I have a good team of doctors. Now you'd ask, well, you say that you have all these issues, but yet you're saying you have good doctors. I also still have lupus, and there is no cure for it. So I'm as
right.
good as I can get. You know, most days I can walk, most days I can cook, most days I can clean, and I do homework with my kids. So, you know, if I'm having three good days and three bad days, then I'm doing good.
Right, right.
So
and
you have to push.
Right. Now, that's another thing that people don't understand, and I want our listeners to understand, and that we need to get the word out that even if you have the best doctor in the world, even if you're a multimillionaire and you have access to anything you want, you're still dealing with remedies that are 40 years old. So like you said, if you can get 2 good days out of a week, you are way ahead of the curve. And that's what people don't understand. It's not about the fact that you don't have access to it. It's the fact that because lupus is such a misunderstood and underreported type of illness, the treatments are just not there. And there's no reason for them to not be there, because I know the technology is there. It just hasn't been applied because, let's face it, everybody, and I hate to put it in these terms, and I don't want my listeners to get offended, but it seems that everybody thinks that it's the right thing to do with breast cancer awareness, it's or drunk driving awareness. And that's all well and good, but the reality is that there are other illnesses that have more devastating effects that are not getting the exposure and the research that they need to be able to have the quality of life that these people like yourself are going through.
Oh, definitely. Definitely. I mean, I look at, you know, no disrespect at all. My mother had breast cancer just recently, mm-hmm. but you see everything that goes into it and you think, well, at least they have a fighting chance, you know?
Right.
They're going to do their very best to try to save each woman and do the very best for each woman that comes along with this illness. But, you know, with me, I haven't gotten much of a different answer with the best doctors. I have great doctors. I haven't gotten much of a different answer or different medication than what I have, you know, for 6 years now. That's what they have to offer me. The only thing they can offer me when I tell them how much pain I'm in is narcotics or pain management, and I refuse to do that because I have to be, you know, alive and alert. I'm a parent. I can't
exactly.
medicate myself and be a zombie. So I choose to live in pain instead. But there has to be better things out there.
Right. And the thing is that I've never been one to actually be political on this talk show. I'm very political in the real world. But my thing is that right now we're going through this whole debate with the health care reform and everything. And one of the things that is very rarely explored when it comes to pain management for illnesses is alternative forms of medication, of alternative treatments. For example, things like acupuncture, acupressure, meditation, massage therapy, all these other venues that actually have been proven successful in other parts of the world. Yet here in America, usually all they want to do is give you a pill that basically, and you can attest to this, Natalie, all it's going to do is put you to sleep. It doesn't do anything to redeem your pain or improve your quality of life.
Oh, no, absolutely. I've tried. I've tried with my insurance to get acupuncture. I've tried Radke,
mm-hmm.
I believe it is. I've tried different
yep.
things, and they won't cover any of that. So
exactly.
it is expensive stuff. And, you know, when we're a family of five with one income, that just can't happen. And nobody's going to volunteer their services for me out of the kindness of their heart, unfortunately. So
right.
you're stuck doing the medicine thing, or you're stuck suffering. And in my case, I do the medicines that are necessary to live every day, which is a handful of pills every day. It's disgusting, by the way. You know, it's unfortunate that I can't do something more herbal, but I'm scared to do things on my own because I could actually cause more damage than help myself.
Absolutely. And the reality is, Natalie, that you shouldn't have to. I mean, you know, because the technology is there, the knowledge is there. And what people in America forget in the United States is that our medical technology comes from other parts of the world. I mean, we've only been here as a nation since 1620, yet places like China and Japan have been there longer, have had the chance to explore these alternative ways of healing. And they have been proven successful, yet for some reason we're so leery of them and our insurance companies won't cover them. And in reality, these alternative methods would actually be more cost-effective because they actually work. And they would be
yeah,
able to provide you with a better way. But you can't get that because they won't cover it. And like you said, you're not going to go and experiment because you can't. You don't want to mess up what little quality of life you have at this point. What do you think are some of the ways that, again, I keep hitting on this because women, there's a lot of women in this country, a lot, and we need to kind of step up and say, you know what, we're not going to take this anymore. And what do you, what are some of your ideas of ways that you think we could get involved to make sure that stuff like this doesn't keep happening?
Well, I mean, to be honest, if I had an answer to that, I'd probably be doing it already. I don't know. I guess because I'm just one voice and sometimes I'm too tired to even think. I don't know. I know that I'm persistent with my doctors, and that's one thing that you need to do, and you have to, you know, allow yourself to be heard and once again get different opinions when you're not happy with your diagnosis. And one thing that people resolve to quickly is that pain management. I mean, if you do that, you're giving in. You're giving in the worst way, because eventually that's just going to take over your life and you'll never definitely be the same. At least I'm here, you know, in my mind. I know what I'm thinking and doing. I can't imagine if I was drugged in that manner who I'd be today. So,
and I totally agree with you, because I know for me, I had an example where I had suffered migraines for a long time, and that's all I ever got was take this medicine, take that medicine, and this medicine you can't drive with, you're loopy, you just have no concentration. And then finally I had to make the sacrifice to say, okay, let me think outside the box. And like you said, my insurance company wasn't going to pay for it, but I wind up actually out of my own pocket paying to go see an acupuncturist with acupressure therapy. And it blew my mind that a condition that I had suffered with for 10 years, at this point, I have to say, thousands of dollars spent on doctor's visits, medications, and all this in a matter of three sessions that cost me probably $380, the migraines were gone. And what boggled my mind was the fact that there are other people out there like yourself, like you said, that you can't afford to do that. And you have to continue to suffer with this with these problems because you're not getting the treatment that's required of you.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just amazing to me that you're continuing to have this positive attitude and not give into it and to continue to do the things that you do. Because like you said, you still have three children at home. You're volunteering in your son's school, which there's healthy people that never do that.
Yep,
do you think
I volunteer
that
for the Boy Scouts, too. I volunteer lots of hours within my community. I mean, last year alone, I put in a few hundred hours of work just in the school. So I keep really busy. If I can get up that day, I'm going and doing something. Unfortunately, I can't hold a job because you can't call your boss and tell him you're sick 3 days of the week.
Exactly. Now, do you think that getting the opportunity to volunteer has helped you be more positive with your illness? Do you think that has helped you to have a better state of mental well-being? Do you think that's been a key to help you stay motivated in face of your illness?
Yeah, I think it definitely helps. Even when I'm feeling sick, there are days that I go to the school when I'm feeling so-so, and just listening to the kids and the laughing and getting the hugs and the, you know, hello, Miss Natalie, it cheers me up, and it brings out, at least it makes me feel happy. And so I can put aside not feeling so well, and I could be happy for other reasons, and I could enjoy life in another way. So I look at life differently. That I can say. I do look at life differently. I'm really spiritual. I'm really I love to help anyone who I can help, even though sometimes it's me who needs the help. And
right.
I love being able to give to others. But I feel that it comes full circle. When I
right.
do for others, I feel like I'm rewarded in other ways. So it's okay, and it helps me. It helps me spiritually. So when I'm sane spiritually, then I can manage, and I can go through that day.
Right. So that to you is very, it's a way to be able to, like you said, focus on something outside of what's going on with you, and it has a healing process. Real quick, I want to let our listeners know, I have this cough. Sorry. We're talking to Natalie Geraldo Martinez. She's a mother of three and wife, and she was diagnosed with lupus a few years back, and she's sharing with us her just amazing and inspiring way that she has decided to deal with this illness and to live her life and to not give into it. For our listeners, I want you to know that you can go to the Lupus website, www.lupus.org, to get more information on this disease. And one of the things that I can suggest is to go out there and women unite. That's all I can say. Women, let's, you know, we're nice. We don't have to be rude, but we have a lot more power than we're willing to admit. Pick up your phones, call your legislatures, insist on more money being channeled into lupus research. The reality is that I have a lot of friends that are in elected office, and they tell me whenever a constituent calls them, they put a lot of weight behind that call because they, in their mind, for every one person they call, that's probably about 1,000 to 10,000 of their constituents that are thinking the same thing but haven't called. Write them, call them, get the word out about this illness. To be able to help people like Natalie who don't have the opportunity to do this for themselves. The Lupus Organization has ways that you can help with fundraising and awareness and just to get the word out. And again, like Natalie mentioned earlier, people with lupus have there are more people with lupus than breast cancer. What was the other one, diabetes and AIDS combined?
And leukemia.
And leukemia combined. And the other thing is lupus is one of the most severely undiagnosed illnesses around. There are patients that have suffered from this illness for 5, 10, 15, sometimes 20 years or longer before they're actually diagnosed. Once they're diagnosed, the available help for this disease, we're talking about technology that's 40 years old, that has been around for that long. And we really need to get the word out there because, sadly, this is an illness that could very easily, I really believe if we had put time and effort into researching it, could have probably already have been cured, but it's not. And it, as a result, there are very wonderful lives, very wonderful people whose life and time is being diminished and their quality of life is being reduced because of the lack of understanding and lack of knowledge as far as this illness is concerned. Natalie, I just had, Mary321 emailed me. She wants to know, what are the ways that you are able to maintain a positive attitude without putting the burden on your family? What are some of the things that you do to put on that face of positivism when being positive when you may not really feel that positive inside?
I always smile. I always smile no matter what, even if I'm lying to myself. And I figure that eventually it'll be contagious enough that I myself will believe it. I mean, it's as bad as it sounds. You know, how I said, I vent that first thing in the morning. I figure if you get it out early enough, it won't bother you. And then I go on. I mean, I have no choice. I've been dealt these cards. And I always look at it and I always remember that God doesn't give us more than we can handle. And at the end of the day, my kids are healthy and they're alive and they're living their lives. And that's all that matters to me. So I live for them. I live for them and I live through them. I experience
their experiences
and that makes me happy. I'm happy with their happiness. So that's what keeps me going is my family.
Now, let me ask you a question, Natalie. What effect do you think your illness has had on your children as far as how they view the world and how they treat other people?
I think they're more compassionate and caring. They're a lot more mature in that aspect. When it comes to illness, they understand. I believe that my older kids, my youngest doesn't understand so much. He just always thinks mommy's sick. But my older kids, I think my son's a little sensitive towards it. I think it really scares him when he sees me sick. And, you know, I've heard my daughter tell me the school's nearby, and when she's heard ambulances in the past, she's thought it's been for mom because I've been taken away in ambulance several times. So they live with fear. I remind them that, you know, I plan on being here a long time. And if I'm not, that I'm okay with that too because I've lived a good life, you know. It's quality, not the quantity, that I have to look forward to. Even if I live till 80, I have to think of it that way because I might not live till 80. So I have to enjoy each moment, and I try to remind myself of that, and I try to remind them of that. I never let anybody go to sleep angry. No one's absolutely, I don't care what kind of day you've had. I don't care if you're angry at me. I don't care if I've grounded you for, you know, your next two lifetimes. You're to give me a kiss goodnight, and you're to say it like you mean it. So, you know, it's given them that positive attitude, and I think they're a little more compassionate and caring towards others because of that.
So the other thing, too, is that because of the way you deal with it, not only, well, one of the things I want to touch on real quick is that that also goes to show that when you have an illness like lupus, you are not the only one that suffers from it. Obviously, your family does too, because they see you go through this, and there has to be that point of frustration for them as well when the diagnosis isn't coming in, when the treatment isn't working, when you're feeling, you know, not well, and they have to deal with that as well. So I can, people have to understand, and listeners have to understand that that's also an added casualty to the fact that this disease is so misunderstood, is that the family has to go through. And now the family has to deal with the fact that, oh, your mother's just a hypochondriac or your wife is just a hypochondriac, because people don't understand that. Now, have you had instances where your children have had to deal with that as well?
Well, I had when my son was younger and I had been really sick and I was going through the chemo medicine, I had gotten really skinny, and I had lost some of my hair, and I was looking pretty bad. And a boy who lived down the street back then went ahead and told him that his mother looked like she was dying from AIDS. And for the first time ever, my son physically wanted to get in a fight. He was just so angry that somebody had the nerve to say that. So it does affect them. It does affect them in that way. Because, you know, they have to hear what other people, I can't imagine what they hear sometimes or what other people might think. But, you know, also for the most part, in my son's age group, I see that the kids are really understanding. He's really open about what I have, and he's quick to tell them my mother has this, and he brings awareness in that aspect. My daughter does too. She's really, you know, she really knows what she's talking about. So it makes them well-rounded at up to a certain point too, because they know a lot more than children their age know. They're taking that information and passing it along.
That's so, right. And now, Natalie, I have to touch on that, and I'm glad that you brought that up, because that was one of my questions. Do you think the fact that you're very honest with them and you're open about it and you're not hiding it from them and you let them know right off the bat, this is what mom has and this is how mom has to deal with it, do you think that is what helps them be able to deal with it better and to be able to educate others?
Yes, most definitely. I would have never kept this away from my kids. I've been asked, I mean, I guess family members and some people that are more old-fashioned, you know, why do you burden the kids? Or why? I think you burden your children more if you don't tell them, because they might get even worse than what it is. I mean, it's bad, but I'm here, and I'm going to be here for a long time. And I want them to savor each moment as well. We really have to remember as people that we have to live every day like it's our last. So I want them to enjoy every day that they get with me, and I want to enjoy every day that I get with them. So I have to be honest with them. I'm brutally honest with them. I sit down and I tell them exactly as it is, and I explain things how they are, and you know, brutally in a sense that I don't sugarcoat it, but I also am really firm in telling them that I do everything that I can to make the situation, you know, better, and that I, you know, listen to my doctors and I take my medicine, and that's why mommy rests, and that's why mommy sometimes is laying down when you finally get in from something. But I don't know, somehow mommy manages to always be there for the football games and the Boy Scouts. Mm-hmm. Somehow I will myself for those things. But, you know, it's just motivation is what it is.
Now, I'm glad you brought that up, because that's something that I want our listeners to think about. It's the fact that you're absolutely right. If the kids don't know what's going on, they're always going to imagine it. It's like that horror movie where they don't show you the boogeyman, and in your mind, it's like the worst thing ever. And then you have the horror movies where they do show it to you, and you're like, oh, that was it. It's a matter of if they know what it is, they become educated about it, and they know what to expect. They're willing to be able to more cooperative. They understand why you're laying down. They don't have to deal with the oh, mommy's just laying down because she doesn't want to deal with me, or quote unquote, she's depressed. They understand this is a real disease. This is what we as a family, and that's the main thing, Natalie, that I admire about you. Even though this is your illness, you understand how important it is that it's a family project. It's a family illness because everybody is affected by it, and you've made that quite clear to your children. And it's not a burden. It's an education and an empowering that you're giving them by letting them know that if we as a family deal with it together, then you as a mom are able to do more for them and be there for them in spite of this illness. Yes. Natalie, we're almost out of time, but okay. I have to tell you, I am definitely going to have you back. One of the things that Mountain Man and I are going to be talking about in the next month or so is actually we're going to have an awareness campaign for lupus in your name. Awesome. We're going to get some information about some fundraising and what people can do. Yeah, because it's frustrating, I know, because I know people with lupus, I know how they have to deal with it, and it's just something that you get to the point that you say, you know, we need to get the word out. We need to do something about it. Natalie, any people you'd like to say hi to or send greetings out to out there?
Well, you know, I just want to say thank you and that I love my husband and my kids, and I want to say hi to my mom and dad and my sister and my best friend, Mel. They are my support system. They're what mm-hmm. keeps me going. So I'm really thankful to them, most definitely.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Natalie. Once again, the website is www.lupus.org. Also, Natalie, if people happen to want to reach out to you, maybe have a few questions, anywhere they can reach you, that they can email you or contact you?
They can contact me through where you contacted me if you give them that information.
Okay, awesome. I will definitely do that. Natalie is available. If any of you want information, just make sure you email me and I will send that information to you. And like I said, Natalie, definitely going to have you back on the show. Thank you so much for taking the time out. I know that I thank your husband and your family for having them, letting them share you with me for an hour, and I'm definitely going to have you back. It was nice having you. It was nice talking to you again, and we're definitely going to have you back on the show. So have a good evening.
Likewise. You too. Thank you.
You're welcome. Real quick now, let's see. We still got Mountain Man. He's on there. We've got less than 2 minutes left. Hold on real sec. I got a caller here. Hello, are you there?
Yes, hello. This is Mountain Man.
Hi, Mountain Man. How are you? I'm sorry I couldn't talk to you soon. I know you had a comment for Natalie, but you can give her the comment, and I'll make sure she gets it.
I just wanted to wish her good luck in her fight, and yes, you and I will get together and do something on her behalf.
Yeah, absolutely. I figure, as most of our listeners know, our show is fairly new. We've only been on the airwave. Wow, we're going to have our second week anniversary, Mountain Man. Isn't that cool?
That is awesome.
Woo-hoo. And our listenership. Oh yeah, and our listenership is growing. So. Don't you think maybe Natalie and the Lupus Foundation should be our big project for December?
Yes, I really do. I really do. I am going to support Natalie in whatever way I can now that I've heard more about her situation, and I really would love to see her back on mm-hmm. the show at a later date to let us know how she's doing and how our family's doing.
Absolutely, definitely, because I think, like I said, the awareness is, it's just crazy how little we know.
Yeah, it is.
There goes the lady in my ear telling me, 90 seconds. She's so annoying, but otherwise, you and I would be yakking forever. For our listeners, Wednesday, who's going to be on the show Wednesday?
Gee, I don't know. It could be.
Yeah.
Mountain Man.
Mountain Man's going to be on our show. It's going to be an amazing show. He's really a funny guy. Thank you for calling in, Chris. I mean, it's just, I cannot wait to have you on the show Wednesday. Mountain Man, you're going to share a lot of stuff with us. Thank you to our listeners. Again, check out thelupus.org. Get some information, or you can hit us up. Thank you, everybody, for joining us. And I hope you have a great evening. Talk to you later, Mountain Man, and see you all later to my listeners. I will see you Wednesday at 8 p.m., and in the meantime, make those dreams a reality.
That's for sure. Make them a big reality.
Absolutely.
And have a great night.
sets in, I'm starting to pace. My nerves unsettled, sweat drips my face. Hands take, can't escape this decision I make. Heart racing, my faith says this is my fate. I'm just bracing, I take in the face of adversity. Tasting this certainty, the breaks ain't hurting me. Gain on a bomb, my pain stronger. Fame smarter, street smarter, train harder. Can't stop me, drop me, I'm not losing. I'm too fast, lightning even when I'm not moving. All heart, leave these cowards on cold. I'm hot, not to mention all the power I hold. Keep moving, keep training, headstrong, be patient. Meet them head to head, I don't care if it's the least safest. Not stopping, have a promise to prove I'm a fighter.